You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Molly Wood, in for Lizzie O'Leary. There's a new book out this week that explores the many controversies surrounding for-profit colleges, like how their priorities tend to be profit. It's called Lower Ed by Tressie McMillan Cottom. Cottom is an assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University, but before becoming a sociologist, she actually worked at two different for-profit colleges. Marketplace Weekend host Lizzie O'Leary sat down with her recently to discuss the effect that for-profit colleges can have on workers in this economy. And they started with the basics, like who actually enrolls in these kinds of schools.
It is true that those who enroll in for-profit colleges are what we broadly call non-traditional, right? But that doesn't just mean that they're older, which is normally what we think of as non-traditional. Right. Non-traditional really means pretty much anybody who doesn't go straight to college immediately upon graduating from high school. For-profit college students tend to be non-traditional. I think the most interesting thing about the for-profit college student universe is that they are overwhelmingly women. Almost a full three-quarters of those enrolled in for-profit colleges are women. They're disproportionately African-American and Hispanic.
One other thing that for-profit students often do is take on a tremendous amount of debt relative to their own personal income.
Yes.
Why does that happen?
That happens for reasons that are the fault of for-profit colleges and then for some reasons that are not their fault, right? So the first reason it happens is there's a lot of evidence now. Economists have demonstrated that for-profit colleges essentially set their tuition conveniently to be the maximum allowable that students can borrow from this federal student aid system, right? It just so happens that most for-profit colleges set their tuition right at the top of what's allowed to borrow.
What a coincidence.
I know. It's very convenient that. And so as it turns out, is in our effort to make college more affordable or accessible for people by allowing them to borrow money to attend college, what for-profit colleges have sort of figured out how to do is, well, as long as they match tuition for that, they can extract additional revenue from students. Right. The flip side of that is the students who are most likely to attend a for-profit college have very little wealth, if not negative wealth, meaning they have more debt than they own. And so they need a fast sort of credential solution because they can't waste a lot of time because time is money.
Yeah.
And well, for-profit colleges specialize in exactly that, fast credentials.
One of the reasons this is so relevant right now is that there are thousands of students who attended for-profit schools that then collapsed and who are trying to get debt relief from the Department of Education. I've reported on them. I know you've talked to lots of them. As taxpayers, how should we think about this? Because these are students who are saying, wait a minute, this contract wasn't fulfilled. Mm-hmm. But also schools who are saying like, well, tough.
Right. And I think it's unfortunate that the way one of the downsides of us turning higher education into an individual consumer good the way that we have is that the public does forget how much we are all collectively invested in higher education. That's why I like to keep pointing out that when we talk about for-profit colleges making $15 billion in profit in a given year, well over 90% of that profit is from federal student aid money. That means that profit is really just a transfer of public tax dollars to the private sector. I think if we think of people's student loan debt then as not their individual problem, but as a collective social problem, because their individual debt is something that we have paid for. Right? It's the public that isn't getting its return, not the individual that has failed. So when schools do not honor their commitment to individual students, they are also not honoring their commitment to taxpayers. Now, on that, what we should be hearing then every time we hear a story about a for-profit college that closes without notifying students or notifying them well, or that leaves students with more debt than a usable credential because they weren't accredited or because they weren't suitable for students to get the licensure to work in their field. When we see student loan debt, we should see, oh, they stole from taxpayers. And the public should be asking for someone to be held accountable for that.
Well, yeah, but you know that the counter argument to that is someone saying, well, you didn't have to take out that debt in the first place.
That is correct. And to that, I say there are lots of things that we don't have to do that we have to do. right? You know, you don't actually have to go to work every day, but you have to go to work every day. Work is how we organize our entire society. Well, one of the things that I try to show in the book is that the choices that we think people have actually aren't practical choices. If the choice is between being employable and not being employable in a world where the social safety net is dissolving before our very eyes, what we're really saying to people when we say to them, you shouldn't have taken on that student loan debt, is we're saying to them, you shouldn't have taken the only chance you had at being employable and having dignified work. And that's actually not a real choice.
Where do we go from here? Immediately after the election, we saw the stocks for for-profit education companies shoot up. And, you know, we are entering a new era of education policy. What do you think is going to happen? And as a critic of for-profit ed, what do you want to see happen?
I think that what is going to happen is what has been promised. I mean, I take this administration at its word, and I actually really worry that we don't do that enough. To riff off of what someone said during the election, I think it was the technology guy, right? He said, the problem with you is you take Donald Trump literally when most
but
people take him figuratively.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, no, we actually need to take him both literally and seriously. And I think that his appointment of Jerry Falwell as a, you know, special advisor on higher education policy and then Betsy DeVos as the education secretary is a meaningful shot to education, to public education, and we need to take it seriously. This administration does not have either a moral or ethical commitment to the idea of public education.
That is a strong charge.
I'm not even sure that they would disagree. I mean, what Betsy DeVos said throughout her confirmation hearing was, yeah, sort of that the idea was okay, but that public education needed to be a market good. Well, then that means you don't believe in public education because by definition, that is not what it's supposed to be. And without that, we do not have, I think, the pushback that we need against for-profit higher education, which is traditional not-for-profit colleges just need to do better. And we can. We can out-innovate. We can out-serve for-profit colleges all day long. We can't do it with declining public subsidies, however, and when we have to constantly sue our government for the right to operate. Those political sort of machinations that are happening right now could make it much more difficult for public higher education to do what it needs to do to better serve the students who are being so poorly served by for-profits.
You study this stuff. You now teach at a public university. What would you do to change this?
I think that we should say to for-profit colleges, if you want the esteem of being a college, and if you especially want the access to federal student aid, 90% of your profit cannot come from federal student aid. You need to show that you generate some other contribution to the market and to the public that does not come from the federal student aid system. So I'm much more interested in us rolling back what's called the 90-10 rule, which says that for-profit colleges can derive up to 90% of their profit from federal student aid, meaning they only have to look around for 10% of their profit margins from other places. And even that they fudge by going after veterans' dollars, for example. I would like to see us address that. That requires politics, and that's why people haven't been as engaged in that. It would involve congressional action. But that's the goal for me. More broadly, if we can't do that, or in addition to doing that, I think we need to attack sort of the root reason why students go to these places to begin with. Overwhelmingly, people I talked to said, I actually don't want to go to school. I just want a good job. Right? I actually don't. As someone said to me who had served in the military, he's like, you know, I have shot $50 billion worth of military equipment, and they're telling me I can't be a bureaucrat somewhere without a master's degree. We need to provide better protections for workers. That means turning back to the role of unions and increasing worker power at work so that employers are forced to invest in the training and development of workers without shuttling them off to for-profit colleges to get it on their off time. It means us going back and saying maybe we need to revisit things like minimum wage and, of course, my favorite, job guarantee programs.
Does any of that feel possible in this political environment, though?
Absolutely not. But it doesn't mean, in the words of one of my favorite people, economist Sandy Darity, they once said the same thing about slavery. it's not over until it's over. Somebody has to be there asking for it and making plans for it to be logistically possible. And that's what I think academics could and should be doing at this point in time, showing how these things are politically and economically possible and to keep putting them on the table. And I think that things like social movements and people who are organizing around things like Fight for 15 have exactly the right idea that you can attack some of these things at the state and local level without necessarily relying on national politics, and that these are battles we can start to fight at the local and state level and then take advantage of opportunities at the national level when they occur.
Tressie McMillan-Cottom is an assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University and the author of Lower Ed. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Lizzie.
Tressie McMillan-Cottom's book Lower Ed is available wherever you get your books.